Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds. Sing with all the voices of Cthulhu.
It's beautiful. Hi, yeah. Everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
My name is Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Color Out of Space. You don't want to color out of space, Tom. That's why they give you the lines in the books.
Yeah. Don't color inside of space, not out of space.
Big flash, like a pink light. Or actually, I don't even know what color it was. It wasn't like any color I'd ever seen before.
Looks like a meteorite.
It's radioactive. I mean, it's from space, right?
Meteorites are generally no more dangerous than ordinary rocks.
How can something that big just disappear? Did you plant those?
No.
Ward, you come here for a sec.
Oh, God.
What are you doing?
Shh.
It's a bit of a misnomer in Just Watch. I have watched Color Out of Space several times in the past month.
It's almost like I knew I was saving myself for this podcast because I just watched it for the first time.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I hadn't gotten around to it. I'm really behind in general with movies. I just haven't had time to sit and watch a movie unless it's something we're specifically
supposed to
do
for a podcast. Yep. I squandered about 7 hours this week watching Tiger King, so
which I guess I, according to literally everybody,
shit,
I need to watch
it. You
have
to watch Tiger King.
I'm getting that like contrarian attitude where I'm like, no, I'm not going to watch it then, but I'm going to watch it, and I'm sure it'll be delightful.
You must watch Tiger King.
Yeah. So, you know, we're probably going to be doing a lot of this going back, and honestly, Tom, I'm excited for this because there's a lot of movies.
Yeah, we'll get to do like lesser known movies or more.
Yeah, and maybe some movies
films
that deserved more hype, or maybe just some films that we missed along the way. I'd love to do, just out of morbid curiosity, Doolittle.
Do Doolittle, for sure. That's available for streaming right now in case you guys are wondering.
Yeah, but so is this, and people should watch it because
you should watch Color Out of Space for sure.
Yeah, I don't think we have to ask each other what we thought of it. It's an excellent film.
I loved this movie.
Yeah, me too.
It's probably the best Lovecraft adaptation I've seen. I really like Reanimator. Stuart Gordon, rest in paradise. He just died this week.
Yeah.
But Reanimator didn't keep the tone of Lovecraft. Like,
no,
Reanimator took the idea and then just made something that was like... Reanimator is funny. It's like Shaun of the Dead horror.
Yeah, I would argue. I mean, it's hard to compare these movies in terms of quality, but in terms of how Lovecraftian they are, I would say Mouth of Madness.
Oh yes, in the Mouth of Madness is I wrote something for Collider. Excuse me. Oh, it's the Rona. It's the Rona.
Oh no.
I wrote something for Collider about how Hollywood has a weird relationship with Lovecraft. Like, we've never really gotten an authentic adaptation of one of his stories, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But I do list In the Mouth of Madness, the John Carpenter film, as being one of the best Lovecraft movies, even though it's not based on any of his works. It's just very much inspired by it.
Yeah, it's called In the Mouth of Madness. Like, that's so Lovecraftian sounding.
And it's so good. My God. We could do what we just watched on In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah, we should. The idea of John Carpenter doing a H.P. Lovecraft-inspired film, that alone, you're just like, oh, fuck, yes. Of course. And this is kind of similar with Richard Stanley.
Richard Stanley. It's his first movie since he lost his mind and went native on the set of The Island of Dr. Moreau in 1996.
Before he disguised himself as one of the extras. Notice the Brando movie in this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's very pointedly playing a Brando movie. In the film, Nicolas Cage is watching a Brando movie.
And he's like, this was always your favorite movie, to his non-existent wife. I would have loved for it to instead have been Batman Forever, but that's just me.
I would have loved for it to have been the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
but I don't think, like, I think even not even 25 years can soften the blow of what he took on that movie. If you guys haven't seen Lost Soul,
yes,
watch it immediately. It's a very good documentary about how Richard Stanley was making the Island of Dr. Moreau, and like all of his concept artwork is so good, and like you can see it in this movie. Like you can see it in the visuals of this movie. That's like, man, he would have made something that was really crazy and special.
It's a wild story because it also explains stuff like why Marlon Brando clearly didn't give a fuck, because Marlon Brando signed on to that movie just because he wanted to work with Richard Stanley. Because
he liked Richard Stanley, yeah. They had a meeting where the studio representative, she fell asleep.
Yeah, so which was really funny because she was there to like supervise because they were concerned.
Right, they were concerned because Richard Stanley had only done two movies, Dust Devil and I forget the other one. I think they're both available on Netflix right now. But he was sort of an up-and-coming horror director. And he had this really great idea for this movie, and they wanted to go for Brando. So she was supposed to be there to like mitigate, and then she fell asleep. And then like Brando and Richard Stanley just hit it off.
Yeah, and Brando's like, "Yeah, I'll be in this movie." And then they fire Richard Stanley because Kilmer sucks.
Right.
They and fired so the Brando's only guy. Just like,
right.
Yeah. Feruza Balk tries to escape the production.
She does. She drives halfway across Australia to escape the production. They originally, instead of David Thewlis, they had cast Rob Morrow from Northern Exposure. And like he saw it was going down and he called his agent and was like, "I don't care what penalty or blacklisting we have to incur. You need to get me out of this movie."
The documentary Lost Soul is... It's. I mean, I guess it goes without saying, it's better than watching The Island of Dr. Moreau, that's for sure.
Oh, of course.
It is a great watch.
It's one of the most fascinating documentaries ever made. It's really good.
Is it still on Netflix?
I just rewatched it recently. It's either on Netflix or on Amazon Prime. You can watch it somewhere for free right now if you have a subscription.
Whatever the case, go watch it. It gives you great context for this film.
Right. The point is that Richard Stanley was clearly very talented, and he had a very specific visual style. And this is the first movie he's made in a quarter century. And goddamn, does it look good.
It looks so good.
It looks so good.
It's a lot of fun. It's
a good movie, yeah.
Yeah. It's about, you know, it's about a guy coming to check the water and ultimately learns, water's not very good here. That's the arc.
Pretty much.
I wanted it to end with him going back to his office, and I'm like, "So what's the water there like?" And he's like, "Bad. It's bad.
I think the water's bad."
It's Nicolas Cage has a little family. They're raising alpacas in the country, in the woods.
Yep.
And
in Arkham.
In Arkham, yep.
They are explicitly in Arkham, yeah.
They're in Massachusetts, yeah. Arkham's in Massachusetts. It's, I assume, Western Mass. I assume it's like technically taking place like... probably a half hour from where I grew up.
Yeah, all of it takes place. This is one of the first movies that has adapted Lovecraft stories that actually takes place in Lovecraft country,
right,
which is Western Mass. It's not even Western. It's kind of like coastal Mass. Like he created Arkham and Dunwich and Kingsport, which is on the coast. And they all get mentioned in this movie. Yeah,
Arkham is based off the Danvers Asylum, which
Arkham Asylum is based off
Arkham
the Dover Asylum.
I mean, yeah. If you look at a picture of that asylum, you're like, oh yeah, there it is.
Yep.
Massachusetts, we love our terrifying asylums.
It's basically Lovecraft lived in Rhode Island, so it was like it was basically he invented a backwoods country area of Massachusetts that was like near the coast.
Yeah, I think that's like Orange, Athol. These are all terrible places, Tom.
Innsmouth is one of the places.
Yeah. I'm just naming like coastal. Lovecraftian locations in Massachusetts that you don't want to go to unless you really want some cocaine and maybe to get stabbed in the country.
Look, maybe not necessarily I'm prejudiced. In that order. You can get stabbed and then get lots of cocaine if that's your thing.
I remember my friend played a punk show at a truck stop bar in Athol, and it was a nightmare, and I loved it.
It does sound like basically where you grew up in Massachusetts.
It sounds more like Central Mass, Central to Eastern Mass. I'm more Western Mass. It's in the area. It's in the area. I'm like a 40-minute drive at best from
Arkham.
Yeah, from Arkham. And so that's this family raising alpacas and having a great time, and then a comet hits. Yeah. Comet has some problems with it.
The comet is carrying an entity, basically, that corrupts the soil, it corrupts the water, and it starts to corrupt things around it. Like,
as their casual squatter describes.
Yeah, Tommy Chong.
Tommy Chong. I love that Nicolas Cage is like, oh yeah, we got a squatter. If you want to talk to him. And it's like, you have a squatter?
The second time I watched it, I sort of understood, because it's like, well, he's got so much land.
Well, yeah, and I was about to say, after meeting Tommy Chong in this, I was like, oh, I'd let him squat.
Right, unless unless he's causing a problem. Yeah. It actually costs a lot of money to get squatters off of your property. I could see just letting this guy, we got a squatter, sure. We have so much land, it doesn't matter. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, and I've seen that in New England where it's like, yeah, you're buying this house. Also, you're buying, like, this forest behind it, technically. Uh-huh. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what you want to do with that.
Probably just keep it
as a forest.
There might be some dinosaurs out there. I don't know. But basically, the meteor has an entity that mutates everything around. It's sort of like the film Annihilation by Alex Garland.
As Tommy Chong puts it, it makes everything like its planet, is what he's saying.
Essentially,
And it's just his guess, but that's what we're seeing, is that everything's sort of turning alien.
It also fucks with time.
Yes. It's very Annihilation.
There's a time loop element in this, yeah.
Yeah. In that Annihilation is very this, because this was
right,
first.
Annihilation clearly took, there's a lot of films that take inspiration from Color Out of Space. It's one of Lovecraft's most famous stories. There's been a few adaptations of it, including one in the 80s that had freaking, what's his name?
I don't know.
Crusher. What? Little Crusher Boy.
Little Crusher Boy. Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton, yeah. There's one in the 80s that had Will Wheaton in it.
Oh, no shit.
I forget what it's called. It's called, like, fuck, like The Gate. No, it's not The Gate, but it's... Yeah. I forget what it's called. Anyway, there's been a few adaptations of Color Out of Space, is the point.
And this one has Nicolas Cage, and there's a bonus there.
This one has Nicolas Cage going completely nuts.
Yeah, because you get to see, as we get to see often, Nicolas Cage lose his fucking mind.
It's produced by Spectrevision, which is Elijah Wood's production company. They also produced Mandy.
Yeah. So many ingredients in this that when I heard it was coming out, I was like, oh, that's going to be amazing.
Right. And like Mandy, we use every part of the cage in this film.
Yeah, you got your regular cage, you got like your like calm cage, your acting cage, and then you got your like freaking out in a car cage, like over the top cage, throwing tomatoes. Yeah. And being silly Cage.
That scene is incredible.
Yeah. And then you got your, like, completely over-the-edge Cage, where he's watching TV, imagining his family.
Right, he thinks his family is there. And for all we know, they may well be, because everyone affected by the color is in a time loop, essentially.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, even if he was... I mean, he's clearly affected by it, he's gone through so much that I was like, I can also accept that he's just lost his mind, because he just saw his wife merge with his son, which is a thing that happens in this. Yep. Becomes
Holy
the thing.
Christ.
Yeah. This is very, again, and it's because the thing was inspired by this, I assume. I think it's probably, in terms of visuals, because I haven't read the story.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they're both kind of inspired by each other at this point. because the alpacas are less... straight up the dogs from The Thing, but not in a way that it's like, oh, you ripped it off. It's like, there could never be too much of that.
Right. And The Thing was based on a story called Who Goes There. The two stories don't have too much in common.
I just assume John Carpenter and Lovecraft, like...
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, when he was making The Thing, he was thinking about Lovecraft a lot,
yeah,
I'm sure.
There's some cyclopean beasts in The Thing. There's not as much straight-up mutation in the original story, Color Out of Space.
Oh, okay.
But it is pretty close to what the movie is.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the mutation stuff. It felt there. Then, visually speaking, it feels inspired by The Thing, but, like, he should have... You know what Richard Stanley should have done is the fucking The Thing prequel that was CGI'd over.
Yep.
Because it also looks very practical, the effects. There's definitely some CGI in this.
There
is, dragonfly and stuff like that.
It's a lot of practical stuff, though.
It's a lot of practical stuff, and it all looks good when mixed together. And then there's a lot of just visual effects of, you know, obviously the colors and the filters and...
The key thing about the color itself, and Cage says it in the movie, is that it's described in the book as being a color you can't quite identify.
Mm-hmm. Which is really hard to do in a movie.
It's impossible to do in a movie. But they do a good job of it by making it this like pinkish purple.
Right. It is funny because when he says it's a color you can't identify, I was thinking like, no, it's purple, Cage. It's like pink purple. But like, yeah. I get it.
Yeah. they make it like this feverish version of pink and purple.
Yeah. There's something.
It's very effective.
It is very effective. That's the element I really enjoy with this stuff, which is how they make the unknown so terrifying. Like,
yeah.
Like the creatures, the weird mutations, that's cool. That's cool. But like the light is the creepiest part of it. And like
exactly,
the noises are the creepiest part of it. The intangible stuff.
And that's one of the reasons why I like the story so much and probably why it's so many people like the story so much because it's one of his most famous stories is it's just about this. Like it never explains what the color is, what its agenda is, why it's what you're saying. Yeah. It's just everything Lovecraft wrote about was playing on that idea of the gap between scientific knowledge and what's actually out there.
Yeah. And I bet the actual describing the color itself is, I feel like, way more effective in a book form because you don't have to show it. So you can imagine a color that you can't imagine, which I really like.
It was a tall task in the book. I always pictured it as sort of green, but I like the palette they went with in the movie. It absolutely works. And in that end scene with Lavinia, when she gets like teleported into the other dimension by the color.
Yeah.
Holy shit. the ending is incredible.
Oh, the ending is fucking incredible. There's like one dumb horror movie move, but I don't really mind it, which was when he shows up with the cop and they're like, we better go to this other guy's place and check on him. And like, I get it. But at that point, your priority should be getting the fuck out of there. But
I get it. And I liked that. I liked that moment because
I liked what it resulted in. Cause I was like, oh, I'm glad you stayed. Cause this scene is awesome.
Right. Yeah. It shows like Tommy Chong has recorded his thoughts about the color, but like the tape is distorted and it's either because time is running quickly and slowly or because Tommy Chong was living in like a time loop that like where time was protracted. So it's either that it's running fast and slow in real time or the fact that it's degraded because he recorded it over like, you know, several decades because of the time loop and like his body is mummified. So it's like it's only been 2 days in our time, but when he's trapped in the color, maybe he's been sitting there for like 50 years. We don't know. And that plays into when they go back to the house and Nick Cage is somehow still alive. And it's like, well, is he still alive or are we seeing the time loop that the color has caught him in, where he's still seeing his whole family sitting in the living room, et cetera, and like we can hear echoes of dialogue from earlier in the film.
And for a second, we see his family.
Yes, we do. Yeah,
which was real creepy. There's some real creepy visuals in this.
I actually know the actor that plays Benny.
Oh, cool.
He's a competitor in the Schmodown, the movie trivia Schmodown. And I've played against him, I think, twice.
He did a great job.
Yeah, he was awesome. And we were supposed to have a Schmodown event this month, but that's obviously been postponed because of the virus.
Right.
And I had been planning for so long because if you've seen me in Schmodown, I play this weird character that sort of thinks movies are real. I don't know quite how to describe him. He's just like, he learns everything he knows about human interaction from watching movies. So I had this gag planned where I was just going to keep asking him why he went into the well.
Yeah, man, that was dumb.
Yeah, it was real dumb. Why'd you go in the
well?
That
was the other horror movie moment where it's like, the dog's in the well. I got to crawl in it. And it's like, man, you really don't have to do that. Your priorities are very simple right now, my friend. You need to leave.
It makes sense for his character, though.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch... Brendan is the actor's name. If you watch Brendan through the movie, like, his character is, like, the most sensitive of the family.
Yeah. No. So it does check out.
It checks out. I mean, it's a desperate move, and it's a dumb move, but, like, it's a move you could see this character making because he's very upset when Nick Cage comes into the attic and he's like, I'm going to kill your mom, brother.
Kill your mom now. Yeah,
I'm going to kill your mom, brother. And he's the one that's the most emotionally affected by what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that he would try to save the dog.
Yeah. I kind of chopped it up to, cause they say a couple times, like, it won't let us leave. And
yeah,
maybe this is me doing too much work for the film, but the film is so good that, like, these little plot moments don't really matter because it's one of those things where I'm like, well, I'm glad you stayed because these scenes are awesome.
Yeah.
If it was like a shitty horror movie that just resulted in more shitty horror moments and they're making these decisions, I'd be a lot less forgiving of them. But right. I was sort of like, yeah, they're sort of compelled to not leave, which they don't really show that.
Yeah, it seems like that's true. Yeah.
But it feels like it traps them in. Well, for the most part, Nicolas Cage and his wife go to the hospital because of an awesome scene.
where she fucking cuts her finger off.
Oh, that was so good.
My God.
She's chopping carrots, and you just know, you're like, ah, fuck.
Yeah.
And she's like sort of trancing out, and the kid comes up and tugs on her, and she chops her fingers, and the blood splatters on her kid. And yep. The kid runs up and goes, Mommy's hurt. And she turns around and lifts her hand and, like, waves at them and goes, supper's ready. And she's missing two fingers because she's just completely fucking out of it. All that lead up was great of them just, like, slowly getting affected by everything.
It's not even that slow. Like, if you notice, there's a scene right after the meteor hits and they go back inside the house and they're trying to comfort the little kid. And it's a single shot that just is pushing very slowly in on the little kid.
Yeah.
Every one of the characters, like, displays, like, a heightened version of what their character is.
Nicolas Cage has already become,
he immediately starts drinking.
Yeah.
Jolie Richardson is immediately, like, over-the-top bitchy.
Right.
Brendan is, like, freaking out about space. And Lavinia is like, this is fucked. We have to get out of here.
Right.
So it's like we see already that, and it's like accentuated by the fact that the camera's like slowly pushing in, that it's like, oh, the color has already affected them.
Yeah. Like,
it's been here for 13 seconds and it's already fucking
with them.
Yep.
Yeah. And it does very weird, different things to each one, that reflect their character, it seems.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage basically goes all The Shining, but I love that he goes kind of in and out of it, or he's just unstable. Like, he's not
right. He's not completely. He doesn't do a complete Jack Torrance. Like,
no, he's bouts of rage
that they establish early in the film that his dad was shitty and like right. he does a voice to imitate his dad, and he uses that voice later in the film when he's Jack Torrancing out. So it's like we see that he's
trying, he's fighting,
he's trying. Yeah, he he's trying. Up,
like when they find the wife brother, and she's like trying to eat the sister. Yeah. You think like, oh, the cop's gonna shoot her, and Nicolas Cage does it.
There's that was a
he
that's
refuses
a great
to
moment.
Shoot her at first.
That yeah, he's going to, but then doesn't, and then he throws Lavinia upstairs, and it's actually when the kids keep trying to call the parents while they're at the hospital.
Right.
We hear like this garbled talking, and what that actually is dialogue from later in the film.
Ah, it's great.
You'll notice at one point. When Lavinia picks up the phone and tries to call Nick Cage, you hear Nick Cage over the phone shout at her, "Go feed your mother," which is what he says when he throws her into the attic with mother brother, with mother boy,
or wife son, depending on which character, which vantage.
Yeah. But yeah, I loved that moment because, like, I forget his name, but the surveyor who's kind of our audience in.
Yeah, I feel like he's the protagonist, technically.
Technically,
the ending proves that as well. He's the narrator. They bookend it with his narration.
Interestingly enough, that's exactly how the story is told, too. It's told by a surveyor who is going to this land.
Nice.
And then he hears about this fucked up thing that happened. But when he and the sheriff break into the attic and see the fucking spider mom brother, they just freeze. They shut down.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage has been slowly introduced to this new world he has to exist in. They're seeing it immediately.
Yeah. It's such a perfect reaction. Because, yeah, like you said, you're expecting, oh, the sheriff is going to blow it away. Nope.
Nope.
When he sees that monster, he freezes.
Yeah, you don't know what
like,
to do.
He's like, what the fuck is that?
And ultimately, he gets eaten by, I don't know, a tree spider? Just a tree?
He gets killed by a tree, yeah.
Yeah. That thing's great. The part where they leave, and he just goes, whoop, gets scooped up.
Yep,
I was
just
like,
gets scooped right up by the trees, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
The trees come to life. It's horrible, too. They shove a branch down his throat.
Oh, yeah, they sure do.
His character in the novel is novella. His character in the story is the character that is reciting the events to the surveyor character.
Oh.
So like the surveyor doesn't witness anything firsthand in the story. He shows up and is like doing a survey of the land, and then this character who has is named Pierce, which was the sheriff's name in the movie, tells him the story of what we just see.
Right. It's very I think of this all the time with novels adapted is mm-hmm. When you read a novel from the perspective of like a screenwriting perspective, you hear about stuff like that and you're like, what a messy idea. But like novels are long, so they can do shit like that. But it's like, yeah, of course you'd have the surveyor go and witness.
Right.
Like, why would you like have a character relay it to another character?
Right. Yeah. From a screenwriting perspective, the first thing you do is be like, well, we cut that character out and just make him the surveyor. You
know, exactly.
We just have him see the shit firsthand. Why would we have it relayed to him? That's weird. Yeah.
It's fucking weird, man. It's weird, HP. What the fuck, man?
Howard Phillips.
He was a wicked racist, right?
Yeah. He was pretty racist.
Okay.
It's a conversation that's being had right now. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, can you separate the art from the artist? And I think for the most part you can with him because he doesn't write about racism.
Yeah. Also, I think he definitely, I don't know, he writes about things coming from the sea to like.
He does, but I don't agree with the argument.
Well, when did he write his stuff?
Early 20th century.
Early 20th century.
I don't agree with. There's an argument you can make that all of his stuff is essentially anti-immigrant,
right?
Because it's otherism,
right?
I don't necessarily agree with that because he was clearly terrified by. He talks a lot about non-Euclidean. I think it's the word non-Euclidean geometry and like gaps in scientific knowledge. Like he's more scared of the unknown not necessarily of...
But he was still wicked racist.
He was super racist. Yeah, he was.
Okay, well,
absolutely.
I guess
I'm not going to apologize for his racism.
Well, yeah, this is my personal take on it, and people probably have different ones, and it depends, obviously, on who gets money, what family or what you want to support. But, like, when they're, like, really dead and been dead for a while, like, I'm less concerned because they're dead. When they're still alive and they're, like, job creators and they're, like, influencing the public still, then I'm like, yeah, don't buy their stuff because we have the power to change it now. As opposed to when it's, like, some long dead person, it's just like, oh, he was a racist. Sucks. What an asshole.
Yeah.
But there's, like, with adaptations, I don't know. Again, I'm a pretty white guy. Like, I'm not pretty. Like, not like I'm pretty and
no,
a white
like
guy.
You're, like you're extremely
pretty white.
Yeah, I'm super white, too. My take on it is, like, if you look at Woody Allen or, like, Louis C.K., like, they make work about the things that they're accused of.
Oh, yeah, that makes it worse. But I think even if it's a current author that doesn't even make work about the thing, mm-hmm. but they turn out to be a monster, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to support that person.
Yeah.
But...
It's tough. Like, I really like Lovecraft's stories.
But he can be a racist, too.
Yeah, he was a fucking... incendiary racist.
Oh, so they're like Edgar Allan Poe was probably a racist. Shakespeare,
yeah, he probably was. Sure,
was wicked
for
racist.
Sure, yeah.
They're all real racist back then.
My point is it doesn't make its way into most of his work.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, not,
it's not.
Yeah.
It's not about that.
Yeah, and that is a big. I think. Yeah, I think when we're talking about old authors, like long dead people, and their racism, their inevitable racism that they all had.
Yeah,
we do have to think of it in the context of, is it in the work? Because if it is in the work, then we're letting their racism survive past them.
Exactly.
Then I wouldn't want to. I would be like, no, let's not adapt that. That's like a real. Like it might not seem that way now, but it's a real racist story. I brought this up just because it's a black guy as the surveyor.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, yeah, take that, you racist HP.
Yeah. You Howard.
Howard. This is
he's
Howard.
Wearing a Miskatonic University shirt, by the way. Which
he's
is
wearing a what now?
Miskatonic University, which is a popular location in Lovecraft stories, and it's also in Reanimator, it's where they're going to school.
Oh, that's cute.
Yep.
That's very cute.
There is one moment where, like, I wish I could remember his name. The surveyor is talking to Nick Cage, and he's like, when Nick Cage tells him, yeah, we've got a squatter on our land. And he's like, well, do you think I could go talk to him? And Nick Cage says, well, you can try. I don't know if he'll talk to you. And they let it hang for a second. So it's like, is he racist? Like,
Elliot Knight is the actor's name.
Okay.
He was very good in this, by the way.
What's the character's name?
The character's name is Ward. Ward, right.
Ward, that's right. Ward. But they let it hang for
a
second.
Yeah, and then when they showed it was Tommy Chong, I was like, oh.
Yeah, well, then Nick Cage clarifies. He's like, well, he doesn't like to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was a weird moment.
Yeah, they sort of... You can adapt. It leaks into a few of his stories, not many, but you can adapt most of Lovecraft's work and not include any of his rampant racism.
Right.
He was extremely racist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He wrote an entire poem about how black people were created to be servants.
Jesus.
He sure did. Yep.
My God.
Yeah, he was super racist, but.
A poem?
He wrote a poem about it. Yeah, a poem.
A racist poem?
A racist poem.
That's why? That's, oh God.
But
you have to read a poem and it's racist.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And he had a cat. Famously, it's in one of his stories. He had a cat named N-Word Man.
Oh my God. So he was. Yeah. Okay. So he's like a.
He was racist. Yeah.
He was extremely racist.
He was very. He was very xenophobic. He was more xenophobic than he was racist, but he was also racist.
So okay,
So that's where the argument that his stories can be interpreted as otherism comes from.
Yeah, I would say there's definitely a level of that in there. But
probably, but there is, you can't deny, like we said earlier, there is something frightening about the unknown.
Yes, 100%. It's why these stories work so well.
Yeah, it's why they can be adapted in pretty much any decade.
Yeah, it's why most horror movies, the tension is lost the moment you see the creature in light.
Yeah, you never show in light.
Yeah, unless you have a really good idea, like It Follows is able to pull that off because you don't feel like you ever see the creature.
Right, and the only time you see Jason in full light in Friday Part 2 is when you see him unmasked and it's a real shock.
Sure. I would also argue those movies never scared me. They delighted me.
They're never scary, but like even by those rules.
Yeah.
The only time you see Norman Bates in light.
Oh yeah.
Is when he's wearing his mom's clothes.
Right. I think it's just that it's horror deals so much with inevitability and the unknown. And it's on so many levels, including the tension builds up, the horror, like the chords that slowly build, like it's telling you something's coming and it's coming and it's coming fast and you can't stop it. And you don't know what it is and you don't know what it's going to do. And we fucking love that. I do. Some people hate it.
We're really into it. No, I mean, it's effective.
Yeah, it's very effective.
The score in this movie is really good, too, by the way.
The score's great.
Yeah. It's almost the Terminator theme at some points.
I
don't know if you noticed that.
That's incredible.
This movie is just so visually good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm looking up the cinematographer, and he did... Oh, I Am Mother, which is a very good-looking movie.
Ooh.
Steve Annis. A lot of music videos, a Mick Jagger music video, an Ed Sheeran music video.
Sure.
It looks like he's breaking into movies.
Sure.
That's the biggest thing that I really like. This movie's great. But I almost would be sad if this movie doesn't result in Richard Stanley continuing his career now.
He's absolutely going to.
Yeah, and making them all realize that we really should have had him making movies for like the last 20 years.
Yeah, we've lost out on a quarter century.
Yeah,
of movies from this director, and that's a real shame.
He has made a few things. I'm looking them up, and there's like these little films here and there. Something called The White Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that was a documentary. I think he did some documentary stuff. The Theater Bazaar, which I think... I think that's a anthology. And then something called The Other World, which is another documentary. So, yeah, it's like non-documentaries. Are you shit? This can't be right. I just looked at upcoming projects in development.
Yeah.
Tom, do you want to know what's in development with his name on it?
I know he's making The Dunwich Horror, but go on.
The Island of Dr. Moreau. On IMDb, in development, Richard Stanley, The Iron Island of Dr. Moreau.
If they want to let him make his version, like you guys, seriously, if you watch Lost Soul and you see his concept art for the film, it's so good.
I feel like I must have known he was making it at some point because I've had this thought before, is if he really if he had the balls, if he really wanted to...
He would cast Val Kilmer as Dr. Moreau.
Yes, he would. That would be amazing.
And maybe now that Val Kilmer has been humbled by 25 years of irrelevance.
Yep. Yeah, and Val, I mean, he's having trouble. I know he was dubbed for the Snowman because he has, I think
he has, he has cancer,
throat cancer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something he hasn't made public, but yeah, he absolutely has cancer.
Yeah. Have you seen Twixt?
No.
Twixt is a movie that came out in the last 10 years, came out in 2011. And it's a movie that I'm kind of curious why the world doesn't talk about
more.
Is
that the Coppola film?
Yeah, it's a movie with Val Kilmer, Bruce Dern, and Elle Fanning, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, and about vampires. And it exists. Elle Fanning, sorry. In 2011. And David Paymer's in it. That's something. And so it's like, I don't know. Why aren't we talking about Twixt more? I guess because it's kind of a slow movie. I've seen it once, and it was kind of slow. But, like, Jesus. It's a Coppola film with Val Kilmer about vampires.
Yeah,
you can see it today.
Coppola's been churning out movies, actually.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He's just been quietly making movies.
Yeah.
He made Jack, and he was like, you know what? I'm going to calm down. I'm going to just make movies for me now.
I'm going to settle the fuck down.
Yeah. Things have gotten out of hand for
fucking
me.
Fucking Jack.
Yeah. I can't. Island of Dr. Moreau.
I can't
give
believe he's doing Island of Dr. Moreau.
It's so good. It's like when you have like revenge fantasies. You know when you have like petty revenge fantasies in your mind of
yeah.
like I'll do this and then I'll do this and mm-hmm. then I can look down at them and be like, I did it, you fuckers, fuck you. That's what he's living right now. He's living like an internal revenge fantasy where he's
come back, my God.
And I'll make Dr. Moreau again and you'll all fucking cry. You'll all cry and you'll all thank
you,
me and say, I'm sorry we ever doubted you.
Yeah. If you watch Color Out of Space, which you should absolutely right now, you will be like, why didn't they let him direct Island of Dr. Moreau?
Yeah,
like,
why didn't they let him? It's
why
the
didn't
biggest,
they let him do his thing?
Like, it's the biggest fucking tragedy.
Yeah.
Of cinema, at least, is the fact that Richard Stanley hasn't been making movies for the last 20 years or making like lots of narrative films, high budget films.
Great. I saw him in person. He came at a Collider to do some interviews.
What did he smell like?
He smelled glorious. He looks exactly like he does in Lost Soul.
Huh.
He's gained some weight.
Sure.
So
people
he's
get
just
old.
Like, he's just like a heavier guy with long black hair and a cowboy hat. Like he looks exactly like he does in Lost Soul.
Right. He's like Robert Rodriguez's cousin. Like,
yeah, exactly.
They got the cowboy hat thing going.
Mm-hmm.
It's just them two, right? That can rock cowboy hats.
You have to really be a specific dude.
You have to be them, or you got to be Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
No one else.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I feel like we haven't even talked enough about the movie. It's hard because I don't want to say much about it.
I don't want to necessarily talk about each scene in the movie. It's just. This is a very good movie. It's a very good Lovecraft adaptation, and Lovecraft is notoriously hard to adapt because of the fact that it relies on so many of his stories rely on unreliable narrators and like shifting realities and shit, which is why In the Mouth of Madness is so good.
And capturing the intangible, capturing
yeah.
feeling, a color that you can't describe. This is why a lot of horror novels almost work better in the entire genre of horror.
Right.
Because the moment you show something, it deflates the fear of it.
That's the big thing about It. In the novel version of It, he can't describe what Pennywise looks like in his actual form.
It feels like almost like a mood in the town. Like, it feels like Pennywise is everywhere, just sort of affecting everything. And
he's also
get that a little bit in the movies, but...
You do. He's also ultimately light. He's just light.
Right.
And they do that a little bit in the new one, which I appreciated, but they also still just make him a giant spider.
Yeah, they do it in the TV movie where it's like there's light coming from his eyes and shit. The spider has lights. And this one, in the remake, it was like little pearls of light.
Yeah, it was like a string of three lights.
Yeah, but I think there's certain books that ultimately it's like, you can't really adapt it. Like,
yeah.
That, it might be as simple as that, is like sometimes you can't adapt these things.
Right, the whole point of Pennywise in It was the fact that he couldn't be described. And that's a lot of what Lovecraft does. So it's hard to adapt his work.
The horror is very internal. It's very psychological. It's yeah, your these it's, people's it's, brains it, are being broken.
Correct. Yeah, it's so much like they see something and it just fucking rips their minds in half. Like they can't process what they're seeing. So
I think we're good. These done as radio plays. We should bring back radio plays for stuff like this.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
I know Richard Stanley is working on the Dunwich Horror, which is another Lovecraft adaptation, because Elijah Wood wants him to do a trilogy of like Lovecraft movies that are sort of interconnected, like a Lovecraft universe.
God bless Elijah Wood. He's been killing it as a producer.
He's American Daniel Radcliffe. He's making insane movies.
He is.
Now that he's free of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, he's just like, I got my Lord of the Rings money. I'm going to go over here and do whatever I want.
I'm going to make some batshit films.
Not to mention all that The Faculty money he got, you know?
Was he in The Faculty?
He's the kid.
I don't remember that.
He's the main kid in The Faculty.
I thought Josh Hartnett was the main kid in The Faculty.
He's the other main kid. Josh Hartnett is the cool kid, the drug dealer. Elijah Wood is the nerd who ultimately, I think, kills the naked alien lady.
Man, I need to watch The Faculty.
Yeah, you do. John Stewart gets his hand cut off, or just his fingers.
Yeah, and gets stabbed in the face.
Yeah, he does. It's you know, that's a great film, I guess. Sure. I enjoy it.
I assume it's a great film, yeah.
Yeah. Man, yeah, Elijah Wood has produced Color of Space, then Daniel Isn't Real, which I still need to see.
It's very good,
Mandy,
yeah.
He was a producer of Mandy. He was a producer on The Greasy Strangler. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Good God, Cooties he did.
His production Elijah company Wood. Is Spectre Vision.
Yeah, he is doing he's doing great.
He's really great likes unique horror films. So hopefully we're going to see two more Lovecraft movies from Richard Stanley.
We better. Just see Color Out of Space, you guys.
Yeah, watch Color Out of Space. It's great. It's a great really film.
Good. If you like horror and you like, you know, In the Mouth of Madness, John Carpenter work, you know, the Pennywise stuff, Lovecraftian shit. This is like the Lord of the Rings of Lovecraft. That's why they need make three more, and there needs to be like a 10-hour director's cut.
Yes.
Like absolutely. Just the part where he's throwing away tomatoes could be just, a solid just hour.
Dunking those tomatoes into the garbage.
God, he hates those tomatoes.
Yep. Yeah, that's from the story. Everything the land produces starts to taste like dust.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Does the story specify that the main character is like very Nicolas Cage-like?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a parenthetical. It's like Nahum Gardner parenthetical. He's extremely Nicolas Cage-like.
Right. With hair that cannot be described. No one can describe it when they see it.
Yep. Yep. That's all in the text. That's all straight from the text.
All right. Should we stop?
I think we should
talking?
Stop. Yeah, I think we should stop doing this.
thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes.
I hope you're all staying safe out there, staying indoors, keeping sane, doing what you can, build some Legos, build a Lego castle or two.
All of these things.
Yeah. And if you can afford to, you should check out our Patreon at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have more exclusive podcasts on there. Like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac. But most of all, take care of yourself.
Yeah, please watch after yourself and everybody else in your house. It's scary right now. We have a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed, where you can get t-shirts and stuff, but don't worry about that right now. Please just take care of yourself.
Of yourself, your family, keep an eye on those alpacas.
Yeah, watch your alpacas.
Stay away from the well. Stay away from wells in general.
Don't go in the goddamn well.
Wells are a dumb idea.
Why you would go into the well, I don't know, but don't do it.
What if the dog's in there?
Don't go into the well, David.
Fine. Just a little peek.
Don't go in the well.
All right.